From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Joining me today in the JPR studios is a singer-songwriter by the name of Tyson Motzenbacher, whose latest EP is called A Kind Invitation, just out in November. There is a previous EP called Almira and a full-length that predates that called Letters to Lost Loves. Tyson Motzenbacher, hello, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. I should say that we've spent the last half hour setting up talking about both of our respective days in Pullman, Washington.
We've been really going down memory lane a little bit, yeah.
And Pullman is not hometown for you, but you spent some time there. Where was home?
I would say that that's the closest thing. Yeah, my parents moved a lot, but we were there. I moved there when I was in middle school. So that's, I think I've lived in San Diego now for 8 years, and that's the longest I've ever lived anywhere. But before that, it would have been Pullman. So.
And Yakima and Wenatchee area and all over the eastern part of Washington.
Yeah, we lived in Prosser, Washington for a while, and Wenatchee and all over the place. Yeah.
Where did music take hold for you?
My dad was a circus performer.
Really?
Yeah, when he was in high school and college, he was a trapeze artist with Great America. And the way that he got into the circus was by playing trumpet in the circus band. And then basically they would travel around as a kid and he would just play on the trampoline and stuff, and then that's how he got into being a circus performer. But he always loved music a lot, and my mother she valued creativity a lot. So when I was like, I think 8 or 9 years old, she got me a guitar, and that was kind of when it all started.
And that was your first instrument, guitar?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever try trumpet?
I didn't. I tried it. It's one of those though that like it's one of those you can't pick up, you know?
Yeah, like, you don't strum it.
Yeah.
Right?
With a guitar, at least, it's like, this hurts and it sounds bad, but I can do it. With a trumpet, it's like, I can't even make this thing make noise, you know?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned San Diego. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about what took you from Washington State down there. I want to hear music first. Tyson Motzenbacher is my guest live today here on Jefferson Public Radio. His newest EP just out in November is called A Kind Invitation. What do you want to do first today?
I think I'm going to do a song called Coeur d'Alene. While we're in the Northwest vein, you know?
Sounds good.
Awesome.
I had a dream that we were standing in the winter. All the tourists were gone or asleep, or they were falling down from drinking in their hotel rooms where they had gone for the weekend. I can't remember what falling in love feels like, even later on. You smiled and said, maybe I can't either. Like it changed, grew bigger. It grew bigger. Because lately, it's been cold around here. Coeur d'Alene, oh Coeur d'Alene. I had a dream that we were still growing taller, and everybody knew that it would only take a little while until brown and green fir cones and leaves. You held a bottle in your naked hand, one eye at the water's edge. You told me that we don't care what you do, but everybody here, we all love you. We all love you. Because lately, it's been cold around here. Oh, lately, it's been wonderful to me. Coeur d'Alene, oh, Coeur d'Alene. Oh, Coeur d'Alene. Oh, Coeur d'Alene. Oh, Coeur d'Alene.
That is Tyson Motzenbacher. It is a pretty tune for a pretty place. It's called Coeur d'Alene. His latest EP just out in November is called A Kind Invitation. Information is online at TysonMotzenbacher.com.
Yeah, good luck spelling that one.
Right? We'll have it up on our website. So what was it that took you to San Diego? I know you did not move all the way from the Pacific Northwest to San Diego to work at a Starbucks. You could have done that in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, there were a couple of reasons. That's a good question. When I was living in Spokane, I was promoting shows there, and I got involved with a booking agent who lived in Portland, Oregon, and this was in 2009, and so it was right when the economy was just eating its tail.
Yeah.
We had a great relationship. I booked a lot of his bands, and he basically, after my senior year of college, he offered me a job, a really like loose sort of like, here's an opportunity for you. And I knew that I wanted to be involved in music. And I thought that playing music as a career was unrealistic. I think I didn't want to. It felt to me like the way that it had always been communicated to me was it didn't have anything to really do with quality of music. It only had to do with being lucky, which is only very, very partially true in my experience. But he called me and said, all right, we have a, you start in touring season will start up again in the late summer. So take the summer off and then come down. And so I was like, well, okay, this is my last summer with my friends. So we went down to Santa Cruz for the summer in California. And, I wanted to learn how to surf and hang out by the beach. So we did that. We had an amazing summer. And a week before I was supposed to move there, he called me and said that the agency had dissolved and it was no longer. But one of the interesting things about that was that he told me that if I was going to come work there, that I needed to kind of put my own music on the side, just because it was, I think, for being, you know, a young person with a band or whatever, working with other bands in the booking world, there's going to be a pretty strong conflict of interest there. And so I had kind of put my own music like out of my mind. I was like, I'm not going to play music anymore. It's going to be over. And so, yeah, basically a bunch of us were like, man, none of us can get jobs. The economy sucks. Bunch of them like were living with their parents again. It was just like no jobs. And I called them. I was like, hey, well, if we're gonna be working for Starbucks or working construction or whatever, we might as well do it by the beach. And so 10 of us moved to San Diego together and got this house right by the beach and worked horrible jobs and just surfed all day. And that's what brought me there. And I stayed.
At what point did the music start to catch hold again?
I had a bunch of songs and I was always writing, and it was always a really important part of my life. You know, at that same time, I had a bunch of stuff in my life happen, and it was really cool for me to be able to use music as what I think music is designed to be used for, which is a human exchange. And I had these songs that I liked, and I wasn't going to do anything with them, and I would occasionally play them for people. And a friend of mine, his grandpa died, and he got a little bit of money, which for us, and I think he maybe got $10,000 or something, which for us then was like a completely like unbelievable amount of money. Like he might as well have won $5 million and it would have been the same thing. And he came to me and he was like, you know, it's really important to me that you make a record. He's like, these songs have been a huge part of our troubled youths together. And he's like, I want to give you this money. And he gave me $3,000, which was, you know, and we were both 21 or whatever, 22. And he's like, I want you to make a record. He's like, if you make the money back, you can pay me back. If you don't worry about it. And so super cheap.
Wow, what a gift.
It was amazing. It was one of the kindest things anyone's ever done for me. And I made the record, and I booked a coffee shop tour. We played these wild little towns all over the West Coast. Just me and a guitar and a friend came with me. And we recouped the record as like, and I made a little bit of money on the tour. And
I was going to say that in and of itself is quite an accomplishment, because sometimes those coffee shop tours are about break even by the time you're home.
At best.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, we were in my 91 Honda Civic, and I think I printed CDs for like, it cost me like $1,000 to print 1,000 CDs or something. And but the cool thing about it was that it was really fun to see. I think in those years, which was not that long ago by any means, but the fact that I think that there was that sort of institutional turmoil, or like the fact that it was pretty hard to be alive for everyone, or at least that like everyone knew someone who had lost everything or was really in dire straits. And the big joke then was like that when everything goes badly, the three things that go up are like the sin industry is like alcohol and tobacco and drugs, and entertainment is the other one because people need something to hold on to. And those songs that I were really from my heart and were honest and really vulnerable, they, I think it was something that people held on to in a hard time in their lives. And it was, people came to the shows and they resonated with the songs. And it was really, really encouraging for me as a, just as a person.
Hmm. Will you play us another of those tunes?
Sure thing.
What is next?
This is a song called Evangeline. And it's a love song about how teenagers are crazy.
Sounds good. It's Tyson Motzenbacher live today here on Jefferson Public Radio.
You stood slow, it's the way I remember you being. The summer slow, innocent love growing hard and strong, and teeth in. So when the sky grew dark, like an old glass jar, black dye in the water as a circle spun, we were the lucky ones. When the thunder rolls, you show me what a love can bring. When the cold wind blows, discover what a love can mean. If the darkness holds, oh, my sweet Evangeline, you are the wild eyes shining. You are the wild eyes shining. Shivered cold at the wind and the waterside meeting. Summer goes, do you wave a farewell inside towards home? Because you can't keep it. So when the grass bent down under the loudest sound, dead silence surrounding and what was to come, we were the lucky ones. Thunder rolls, you show me what a love can bring. When the cold wind blows, discover what a love can be. If the darkness holds, oh my sweet Evangeline, we were the wild eyes shining. We were the wild eyes shining. We were the wild eyes shining.
That is Tyson Motzenbacher, live today here in the JPR studios. Information is online at TysonMotzenbacher.com, spelled with a B-O-C-K. Right?
Yeah.
B-O-C-K-E-R.com. The latest EP out in November is called A Kind Invitation. There was also Elmira, and there was a full length from before that. Tyson, before the tune, you mentioned your mom.
I did.
And you used a was.
I did use a was, yeah.
You lost your mom a few years ago.
I did, yeah, in 2013.
I'm very sorry.
Thanks, same thing.
That inspired quite an epic trip for you.
It did,
literally,
yeah.
Spiritually, all things in between. Tell me about that journey. What did you do? What were you looking for? What did you find?
I've been touring pretty extensively at that time, and my mom got sick with stage 4 cancer, which is just not fun to talk about. It's actually one of the hardest things about. I think that like there's a few things that nobody wants to talk about, and that's one. Partly because it's not sexy in any way. Like there are some other things that I think are tragic that are still that feel like there's a poetic thing to. There's like a poetic justice to them, but sickness is just not poetic. It's just awful, and so yeah, she knew me really well. She was a hero of mine. She was a really strong person and a really wise person. And she knew that I was really bad at taking. She knew that I was really bad at personalizing tragedy or personalizing sorrow. I tend to push those things aside. And so she knew that she wasn't going to make it. I was in denial. She called me one day and she said it's time to come home. And I knew that that meant that it was towards the end. And I came home and she sat me down on the couch and she's like, you know, you're really bad at being sad. And I was like, yeah, I know. I am bad at it. She was like, if you don't capture this moment, you are going to lose one of the great privileges of life, which is to be able to note and instill a value by recognizing it after it's no longer there. That's like one. I think that like finding value in something that's gone is one of the only ways to objectively hold like a full value of a person or a thing. And she said, I want you to do, she's like, when I'm gone, she's like, I want you to do something irresponsible. And I was like, like what, Mom?
You're like, Mom, if you only knew how many things I've already done that were...
Oh, she knew. She knew. And like, you know, when I was 19, I moved to Europe and lived there for 6 months, just like living under bridges and stuff. And she was not thrilled about that, but she understood why I was doing it. I mean, my mom like rode her bicycle across the U.S. alone when she was 21 and rode her bike across the outback in Australia and almost like died of thirst in the outback. She's like... a really interesting person. And she was like, yeah, do something irresponsible. And I said, like, what? She goes, yeah, she basically what you just said, which is, she's like, I don't know, you do irresponsible stuff all the time. She's like, think of something. And then, you know, while you're doing it, think about why you're sad that I'm gone.
Wow.
And which is one of the cool, but probably the best advice anyone ever gave me. And so she was, you know, she was really sick. We were actually in hospice and she was kind of in and out of being able to really vocalize her what she was thinking and feeling. And I had this idea, which was that, you know, while I've been touring, I've been driving up and down the California coast, like all the time. And, I decided that I was going to walk that whole way. I was going to walk from San Diego to San Francisco, which is I think that if you don't take the highways, the way that I did it, which is kind of following the beach, it's a little over 600 miles, like 650 miles or something. And so I walked into her room and I was like, Mom, I figured out the irresponsible thing I'm going to do. I'm going to walk to San Francisco. And one of the last things that she said to me is she looked up at me and she was like, you know, you could go all that way without doing anything at all. And her point was like, great idea, but like there has to be a reason behind the things that you do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so I, after her, she passed away on her birthday, on the day after her birthday. Her 61st birthday, and I flew home to San Diego, and I woke up the next morning, and I put a backpack on, walked out the front door of my house, and just started walking north, and I did that for 40 days. It took it took me exactly 40 days to get from San Diego to the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and that's where I actually wrote the majority of the LP, the last full-length record that I made, which is just walking on the side of the highway.
What kinds of things did you discover, both literally and about yourself internally?
One of my favorite moments of this was actually the moment that I got to the Golden Gate Bridge. And I was sitting there and I was looking at the bridge. There's this old fort there. And I was standing on the concrete of the fort and I was looking out and the sun was coming down. And I was trying to figure out what it meant. I think that was like, you know, because something else that my mom told me, and I've talked about this a lot, but she said to me, she's like, you know, in the movies and in books, like the end comes at the end, and there's been a character arc, and there's been a plot, and the things are tied up. And she said that in life, the ends always come in the middle. Mm. And it's really difficult as a person that is used to the idea of story and narrative and like meaning in a package It's really difficult to wrap your mind around an end coming in the middle. And I was standing there looking over it, and I was trying to figure out what it meant. And I realized that it was in the same exact way as my mom. The walk was just sort of a paradigm of that. It was like, oh, I'm still the same. Like nothing changed. And I think that was really frustrating, being like, okay, I walked for 40 days. I said, nothing changed. I'm the same person. The only thing that's changed is that now I know what's wrong better. Mm. Like I can see the empty spaces. That was something that I learned. It was like that a loss is ultimately an empty space, and the empty space takes on a figure. Like it takes on a personality and a sort of it becomes visceral. Spaces do. And I realized that I was the same person. I was still bad at feeling sad. I still didn't understand the weight of injustice in the world and why or how that was supposed to play into my future. But I just could see that they were there. I could see that, like, my failings better. I could see her life as being beautiful better. And those things felt to me like characters that were going to walk with me into the future. Like, more than anything, that time was a beginning. Which was also something that made no sense to me at the time.
You kept a blog up at the time, right? Both photos and also just journaling?
Yeah. Also, that was really frustrating. I think I had this, I love to write. I was a literature and writing major in college. I like writing. It's a big part of my music is the lyrics. And I had this feeling that I would write and that I would blog and that people would kind of be able to follow along and that I would take these photos. I like old film cameras a lot, so I brought my film camera. And the first day my film camera jammed. And so I had to have a friend mail me one, which I got in a post office in Monterey. So I didn't get my camera until, you know, basically I was there.
Yeah.
And I also realized that if I was trying to, like, keep up any form of appearances or, like, trying to make it any form of display, that was completely failing the point of it. It had to be something that was completely for me. So, like, I think I put, like, an Instagram post the first day. And then the second day I was like, no, like, we're not doing this. And I think that was also, like, a learning thing was that I'd been a public person or at least someone that was displaying my inner workings to the people and – or at least the people that were interested. And this was the first moment where I was like, this is not for anyone else. This is for me. And – I turned everything off and I wrote a couple blog posts along the way of just basically to show people that I was still alive. Yeah. I wrote in a journal every day and I still have that journal and it's one of my most treasured things because those are thoughts that came about at a really important time in my life and are really thoughtful because that's the space I was in.
Well, in a roundabout way, we did all end up with something from it because you got a collection of songs out of it and we now have a record of those songs to listen to.
That's right. Yeah.
So there were definitely some good things that came out of that journey.
Oh, thank you.
Tyson Motzenbacher is my guest today live here on Jefferson Public Radio. His newest EP, which was released in early November, is called A Kind Invitation. You can find out information at his website, tysonmotzenbacher.com. Will you play us one more tune?
I'd love to.
What do you want to wrap up with today?
Well, you know, earlier we were talking about the town that we both lived in for a while, a little town in Washington called Pullman. And this is a song I wrote about leaving there. It's called Can't Come Home Again.
What the winter brings in this small town is wrapped up in frozen ground. When the spring arrives, walks in sleepy-eyed, o'er and over a thousand years ago. It's true, it's been a while, it's been a long while. Your eyes miss the grassland, miss the river sand. As I tried, I made a moment of it all night. Another 100 miles of daylight, I found that I'd come back home again. As I tried, I made a moment of it all night. Another 100 miles of daylight. I found that we'd come back home again. What the summer brings in this small town is rot and broken ground. When I close my eyes, I can see it now. I can see you standing in the dark. It's true. It's not the same. It's not the same. You smile. It's not the same. It's not the same. No. I tried, I made a moment of it all night. Another 100 miles of daylight. I found that we'd come back home again. As I tried, I made a moment of it all night. Another 100 miles of daylight. I found that we'd come back home again. As I tried, I made a moment of it all night. Another 100 miles of daylight. I found that you can't come home again, no. You can't come home again, no. You can't come home again.
That is Tyson Motzenbacher playing live for us today here in the JPR studios. His newest release is an EP called A Kind Invitation. You can find information on his full-length Letters to Lost Loves at the website tysonmotzenbacher.com. Tyson, it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming by.
It's been a really pleasant time with you.